Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Daimoku. What is it? Why is it? Is it magic words? Is it a spell? An incantation? Yeah, I've heard all of those things from people who, well, they're ignorant. They just don't know. So in this first Gosho that we finished last time, the one essential phrase, in a very short writing, and this was one of Nichiren's great, I think, compassions. We're going to start another writing of his today written to a woman. And that's only significant because we still live in a world where women are often secondhand citizens. Although we're now shifting to men joining them there. So who's a first class citizen? Maybe AI. Anyway, my politics are showing. Yeah. But as much as Nichiren is fully capable as a scholar, a bodhisattva, to write a document like the Rishon Kokuran, or the opening of the eyes, or, I mean, these long discourses with tons of, he speaks bibliography. He has references from all over, not only the scholarship of Buddhism, but the scholarship of cultural tales and folklore and mythologies. He references it all in order to buoy his arguments, his salient points, his clear understanding on any subject, right? That pertains to Buddhism. I mean, he hardly talks about anything else, but he does talk about everything else in association with it. Anyway, so what's your point, Sylvain? Well, the one essential phrase for when you look at it next to, for instance, the Rishon Kokuran or the opening of the eyes, is a very, very small document explaining this very small practice, but the implications are immense. But he doesn't spend a lot of time with hyperbole. There's the word I couldn't think of yesterday. Of course he uses hyperbole. All of storytelling is hyperbole of a sort. And Buddhism is taught through language, which itself is a story. Language isn't fact. It never is. It's just a lot of fingers pointing to experience. And Buddhism dissects that to the ultimate, yeah? So what is Daimoku? Daimoku says, Nichiren says, it's no less than invoking the knowledge, the meaning, the absorption of the entire scholarship of Buddhism. And that entire scholarship of Buddhism, the whole meaning behind Shakyamuni's enlightenment and his showing us how to do exactly as he did, is ultimately explained in the Lotus Sutra. And Myoho Renge Kyo is the distillation, the funnel, the invocation of that supreme knowledge, the ultimate knowledge of self-manifesting Buddhahood. It's like driving a car. Once you learn how to drive the car, steer the car, accelerate, stop the car, obey rules of traffic, you're off and running. You're driving. Do you need to know how variable valve timing works in the engine? Do you need to know the power delivery system for a battery electric vehicle and how that wattage and power is channeled to motors to... Do you need to know physics to understand that the torque is applied and developed through these various mech? Do you need to know any of that? No. You just drive the freaking car. It's really easy. Almost scarily so. Because when you dive under the hood, if you care to look, and start to understand how this 6,000 pounds of steel is plummeting through the road with little patches of rubber, all that remain of your control over where that huge projectile goes, it starts to be scary. It's like putting an automatic weapon in the hands of a 4-year-old. But that's the power of simplification and invocation. Yeah? This is why the primary thing we learn to do, we teach ourselves to do, is simply dedicate our minds to pay attention and invoke Buddha-ness. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Right? That's basically the one essential phrase. So now we're going to move on to the next one. The recitation of the Hoben, or the expedient means, and the lifespan of the Tathagata lifespan chapters. In the letter you sent by messenger, you say that you used to recite one chapter of the Lotus Sutra every day, completing the entire sutra in the space of 28 days. But that now you read the Medicine King chapter once a day. You ask if you should simply read each chapter in turn as you were originally doing. So this is a woman asking for guidance on, nobody's ever told me how to do this. I've just been doing it the traditional way. We get up every day and we read our book, right? From cover to cover. And when we're done, start over. That's somehow we're supposed to learn it. But I've taken a habit of just reading this one chapter. The one, maybe it meant the most to her. Maybe it's the one she's more quizzical about it. Maybe it's just, she likes it. Is it wrong? Is it wrong? Because I'm sure the question must arrive then, if I'm doing this, should I be doing that with every chapter? Maybe I should read the same chapter for a full year before I move on to the next one, right? There's an element of boredom there, don't you think? And there's also an element of studiousness, because it seems like every time I read this chapter, I get a little bit more out of it. I get something new out of it. That's really interesting, isn't it? Because isn't that how we teach ourselves? Right? With every vicissitude in our minds, because moment to moment, we're constantly changing. You read the same thing every day, day in and day out. And some days it seems very different than it did before. Did it change? No, your mind is changing. Catch on. So interesting opening. I wish we had her letter to read, yeah? I've often wondered about that as we've read through so many of Nietzsche's writings. It's like, okay, he's responding to somebody. It'd be nice to know what he was responding to. Did they ask about how much mayonnaise to put in potato salad and you came up with a discourse on the Lotus Sutra? We don't know, right? But there's a lot to learn just from Nietzsche's writing. So without getting any more weird. As for the Lotus Sutra, he continues, one may recite the entire sutra of 28 chapters in 8 volumes every day. Or one may recite only one volume, or one chapter, or one verse. Or one phrase, or one word. Or one may simply chant the Daimoku, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, only once a day, or chant it only once in the course of a lifetime. Or hear someone else chant it only once in a lifetime. And rejoice in hearing it. Always with Nichiren, the point is, do you just dismiss it? Or do you really pay attention? Because that's where the mental observation, that's where the Gohanzen is awakened, yeah? Or rejoice in hearing the voice of someone else, rejoice in the hearing, and so on. In this manner, to the 50th hearer, right? That comes from Shakyamuni himself. And if one were to be at the end, even if one's resolve were weak and one's sense of rejoicing deluded, like the frailty of a child of 2 or 3, or the inability of a cow or horse to distinguish before from after, the rewards one would gain would be 100,000, 10,000 million times greater than those gained by persons of keen faculties and superior wisdom who study other sutras. Persons such as Shariputra, Madhagalayana, Manjushri, and Maitreya, who had committed to memory the entire texts of the various sutras. Their merits don't match one single daimoku because of the hierarchy of the teachings, the most meaningful, most complete teaching, the Lotus Sutra. We find this mentioned, he goes on, in both the Lotus Sutra and the 60 volumes of commentary by Tendai and Miao Lo. So Nichiren isn't the first to point this out, right? Thus the sutra states, concerning these rewards, quote, even the Buddha wisdom could never finish calculating their extent, end quote. Not even the wisdom of the Buddha can fathom the rewards such a person will attain. The Buddha wisdom is so marvelous that it knows even the number of raindrops that fall in this major world system during a period, for instance, of 7 days or twice 7 days. And yet we read that the rewards acquired by one who recites no more than a single word of the Lotus Sutra are the one thing it cannot fathom. How then could an ordinary people like ourselves, who have committed grave errors, possibly understand these rewards? Notice Nichiren includes himself. He's not, I'm the teacher, I'm the this or the that. Ordinary people like ourselves. However, it is now some 2,200 years since the Thus Come One's passing. For many years, the 5 impurities have flourished and good deeds in any connection are rare. Though a person may do good In the course of doing a single good deed, he accumulates 10 evil ones, so that in the end, for the sake of a small good, he commits great evil. And yet, in his heart, he prides himself on having practiced great good. Such are the times we live in. Moreover, you were born in the remote land of Japan, a tiny island country in the east separated by 200,000 ri of mountains and seas from the country of the thus come one's birth. And you are a woman, burdened by the 5 obstacles and bound by the 3 obediences. Right? Parents, husband, children. How indescribably wonderful, therefore, that in spite of these hindrances, you have been able to take resolve in the Lotus Sutra. Right? Not just habit, not just playing at enlightenment, but really biting into it. This is a constant theme with Nichiren. If you don't commit, what can you achieve in life, let alone Buddhist practice? Even the wise, he goes on, or the learned, such as those who have pored over all the sacred teachings propounded by the Buddha in the course of his lifetime, and who have mastered both the exoteric and esoteric doctrines, are these days abandoning the Lotus Sutra and instead reciting Amida Buddha, Amida Buddha, Amida Buddha, the Nembutsu, yeah? What good karma you must have formed in the past, then, to have been born a person able to recite even so much as a verse or a phrase of the Lotus Sutra. This is a precious thing. It's easy to discount because it's so easy to do. But understand, always, under your daimoku, every time you chant and invoke Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, you're not merely chanting words or sounding out beautiful characters. What you're invoking is the entire mastery of the engine of life, the universe itself, the power that moves it, this moment-to-moment momentum pushing us into and through time-space. Your energy moving through time space, but you're experiencing it fully without hindrance. See how immense that is. When I read over your letter, Nichiren says, I felt as though my eyes were beholding something rarer than the Adambara flower. Right? The Adambara flower is a flower. It's folkloric. I think I found once that it exists, but the stories about it are that it only blooms once in every 500 years. There are different numbers. It depends on whose account you read. Yeah. Something even scarcer than the one-eyed turtle encountering a floating log with a hollow in it that fits him exactly. That's from another story, right? Which is a wonderful story. And I believe it's in the Lotus Flower, the Lotus Sutra. Moved to heartfelt admiration, I thought that I would like to add just one word or one expression of my own rejoicing, endeavoring in this way to enhance your merit. Let me share something with you. I think perhaps you'll be able to cull some great inspiration from. I fear, however, that as clouds darken the moon or as dust defiles a mirror, my brief and clumsy attempts at description will only serve to cloak and obscure the incomparably wonderful rewards you will receive, and the thought pains me. He doesn't think he's up to the task.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, in response to your question, I could scarcely remain silent. Please understand that I'm merely joining my one drop to the rivers and the oceans, or adding my torch to the sun and the moon, hoping in this way to increase even slightly the volume of the water or the brilliance of the light. I will try to answer your question on how you should practice, but in light of everything I've just said, I can only make a contribution. In other words, don't weigh so heavily on my words that you take them as this is the only way. Try to understand the sentiment and the guidance I'm giving you and how to incorporate it into your daily life. Because obviously you're committed. Your question is coming from your heart on wanting to do this the best way possible. Of course I can't know that. I can only know how to encourage you and inspire you. You're the one who has to figure out your path. There it is, right there in Nichiren. First of all, he says, when it comes to the Lotus Sutra, you should understand that whether one recites all eight volumes or only one volume, one chapter, one verse, one phrase, or simply the Daimoku or title, the rewards are the same. It's about the commitment, right? It's coming. I can feel it. It is like the water of the great ocean, a single drop of which contains water from all the countless streams and rivers, or like the wish-granting jewel which, though only a single jewel, can shower all kinds of treasures upon the wisher. And the same is true of 100, 1,000, 10,000, or 1,000,000 such drops of water or jewels. A single character of the Lotus Sutra is like such a drop of water or such a jewel, and the 100,000,000 characteristics or characters are like 100,000,000 such drops or jewels. Now, I will add, once again, I need to point this out. No matter where you live in your life, if somebody puts a drop of ocean water in your hand, so what? You probably absorb it into your palm before you have time to really consider it. But if you've seen the ocean, or even great lakes, the presence, the power. If you live near a beach, go watch the waves one day, especially if it's a rocky beach. But I had an epiphany one night as the sun went down and the ocean got very dark, really considering the sound, which during the day I thought was loud, but at night, the power it was expressing, it actually frightened me to consider how powerful this thing is we call the ocean. And so for somebody to then tell me, here's a drop of ocean water, how could I fail to understand, to experience, to reference the majesty and the amazing wonder that is the ocean, even though just a little drop. This is always the point, my friends, that chanting Namu Myoho Renge Kyo isn't simply seven rhythmic repetitions, but the actual invocation of the entirety of understanding, meaning, much of which we still don't keep in mind, but every day hope to awaken more and more. Yes? It's a gateway. It's a, what did Nichiren call it? Oh yeah, Gohonzon. The primary objective to awaken, open our Buddha-ness experience. On the other hand, a single character of the other sutras, or the name of any other various Buddhas, is like one drop of the water of a particular stream or river. or like only one stone from a particular mountain or a particular sea, one such drop does not contain the water of countless other streams and rivers. And one such stone does not possess the virtues that are inherent in innumerable other kinds of stone. There's a typo there. Therefore, when it comes to the Lotus Sutra, it is praiseworthy to recite any chapter you have placed your trust in, whichever chapter that might be. So maybe it's the Enchanted Palace, or the story of the doctor and his three sons that you relate to. So read that, but always chant. Yeah? Generally speaking, among all the sacred teachings of the Thus Come One, or the sermons of the Thus Come One, none has ever been known to contain falsehoods. Yet, when we consider the Buddhist teachings more deeply, we find that even amongst the Thus Come One's golden words, there exist various categories, such as Mahayana and Hinayana, provisional and true teachings, esoteric, exoteric doctrines. These distinctions arise from the sutras themselves. And accordingly, we find that they are roughly outlined in the commentaries of the various scholars and teachers. To state the essence of the matter, among the doctrines propounded by Shakyamuni Buddha in the 50 or more years of his teaching life, those put forward in the first 40 or more years are of questionable nature. Questionable only in regard to their ultimate goal, right? We can say so because Buddha himself clearly stated in the Immeasurable Meaning Sutra, quote, "In these more than 40 years, I have not yet revealed the truth." And in the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha himself proclaims concerning its every word and phrase, quote, "Honestly discarding expedient means, I will preach only the unsurpassed way." Right? We've talked about this before. Everything before the Lotus Sutra was Shakyamuni teaching to people's capacity, what they could understand, what he could then put as a carrot for them to work toward. But in the Lotus Sutra, does away with all that. He says, okay, I did it. This is how I did it. This is how you do it. Period. That's very unique amongst all the sermons of Shakyamuni Buddha, yeah? Moreover, many treasures Buddha sprang up from the earth to add his testimony, declaring, quote, "The Lotus Sutra of the Wonderful Law, all that you, Shakyamuni Buddha, have expounded is the truth," end quote. And the Buddhas of the Ten Directions all gathered at the assembly where the Lotus Sutra was being preached and extended their tongues to give further support to the assertion that not a single word of the Lotus Sutra is false. It was as though the great king, his consort, and his most venerable subjects had all with one accord given their word. Suppose that a man or woman who has recited even a single word of the Lotus Sutra were to be dragged down by the unfathomably heavy karma of the 10 evil acts, the 5 cardinal sins, or the 4 major offenses, and fall into the evil paths, right? The lower worlds, realms. Even if the sun and moon should never again emerge from the east, even if the great earth itself should turn over, even if the tides of the great ocean should cease to ebb and flow, even if broken stones are made whole, and even if the waters of the streams and rivers cease to flow into the ocean, no woman who believes in the Lotus Sutra could ever be dragged down by worldly faults and fall into the evil paths. Your only obstacle is your own karma. And if you're addressing it through the Lotus Sutra, you've already planted the seed. You've made the cause to enlighten. Should I go on? If a woman who believes in the Lotus Sutra should ever fall into an evil path as a result of jealousy or ill temper or because of excessive greed, then the Thus Come One Shakyamuni, the Buddha Many Treasures, and the Buddhas of the Ten Directions would immediately be guilty of breaking the vow they have upheld over the span of countless kalpas never to tell a lie. Their offense would be even greater than the wild falsehoods and deceptions of Devadatta or the outrageous lies told by Kokalika. These are all references to sermons, yeah? But how could such a thing ever happen? Thus, a person who embraces the Lotus Sutra is absolutely assured of its rewards. Now, that doesn't mean every day is blissful. What it means is that once you commit, you now know how to get there. Once you invoke Buddha-ness, once you awaken that portal, that Gohonzon in mind, to Buddha-ness experience, you can never fully close that door, ever. You've opened it. It's ajar. Now, your entire life from that moment on is about, are you going to commit to it? Are you going to fling that door wide and experience it as much as you possibly can immerse yourself in it? Or are you going to constantly shy away from it, knowing that it's there, waiting? On the other hand, even if one does not commit a single evil deed throughout one's entire lifetime and observes the 5 precepts and the 8 precepts and the 10 precepts and the 10 good precepts and the 250 precepts and the 500 precepts or countless numbers of precepts, even if one learns all the other sutras by heart, makes offerings to all the other Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and accumulates immeasurable merit, if one but fails to put one's resolve in the Lotus Sutra, or if one has resolve in it but considers that it ranks on the same level as the other sutras and the teachings of the other Buddhas, or if one recognizes its superiority but constantly engages in other disciplines and religions, practicing the Lotus Sutra only from time to time, or if one associates on friendly terms with the priests of the Nembutsu, who do not believe in the Lotus Sutra but slander it, or if one thinks that those who insist the Lotus Sutra does not suit the people's capacity in the latter age are guilty of no fault, then all the merit of the countless good acts one has performed throughout one's life will suddenly vanish. Understand that once you commit to the ultimate practice of Buddhism, the ultimate truth, if you treat it like it's just another newspaper on the day, or that you fraternize with people who would say, oh, yeah, whatever, we do this. This is what's it. You're breaking something ultimate. You're working against the universe. Moreover, the rewards resulting from one's practice of the Lotus Sutra will for some time be obscured. They don't go away, but they can be deeply obscured, yeah? That door's ajar. But if you surround that door with crap, lies, bad intent, even if you blissfully tell yourself, yeah, but they're just my friends, I'm just going to play along, so what the harm, you know? I'm going to accompany my friends to the Catholic Church and listen to a sermon. It's a grave insult to your Buddha-ness. And you will have to recover from it. Create our own obstacles. And one will fall into the great citadel of the Avicii hell. As surely as rain falls from the sky or rocks tumble down the peaks into the valleys. What is the Avicii Hell? Is it some mystical place? No, it's samsara. Right? It's the first noble truth. That life without intent on enlightenment is collection, possession, constantly running after an identity. It's pain, it's stress, it's anxiety. In a word, suffering. That's the Avicii Hell. Even if one has committed the 10 evil acts or the 5 cardinal sins, so long as one does not turn one's back on the Lotus Sutra, one will without doubt be reborn in the pure land and attain Buddhahood. That pure land is right here and now. That same land of possessions becomes an emancipation from the ownership of those things that we think we own, we possess, we collect, but they own us. On the other hand, we read in the sutra that even if one observes the precepts, embraces all other sutras, and believes in the various Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, if one fails to take resolve in the Lotus Sutra, one is certain to fall into these lower worlds, right? Hell, hunger, animality, so on. Limited though my ability may be, when I observe the situation in the world these days, it seems to me that the great majority of both lay believers and members of the inner circles, the teachers, monks, are guilty of slandering the correct teaching. Certainly in medieval Japan, this was the bane of Nichiren's existence. He was surrounded by it, right? But to return to your question, as I said before, though no chapter of the Lotus Sutra is negligible, among the entire 28 chapters, the expedient means chapter and the lifespan chapter are particularly outstanding. Nichiren's talked a lot about this, but he's reminding this woman, maybe she's never heard it, but that second and 16th chapter of the 28 chapters of the Lotus Sutra reveal key essential points of both the provisional section of the Lotus and the drop the mic moment of the Lotus Sutra. That Shakyamuni isn't Buddha, but that Buddha is an experience innate and awakenable in all forms of life. Certainly in the sentient mind. Oh, never heard that before. The remaining chapters are all, in a sense, the branches and leaves of these two chapters. Therefore, for your regular recitation, I recommend that you practice reading the prose section of the expedient means and the lifespan chapters. Isn't that gongyo? In addition, it might be well if you wrote out separate copies of these sections. The remaining 26 chapters are like the shadow that follows one's body or the value inherent in a jewel. If you recite the lifespan chapter and the expedient meat chapter, then the remaining chapters will naturally be included even though you don't recite them. It is true that the Medicine King and the Devadatta chapters deal specifically with women's attainment of Buddhahood or birth of in the pure land, right? Same thing. Oh, we get a clue now as to why she seized upon that particular chapter, because it relates to her, not only as a person, but as a woman. But the Devadatta chapter is a branch and leaf of the expedient means. And the Medicine King chapter is a branch and leaf of the expedient means. And the life chapters, Therefore, you should regularly recite these two chapters, the expedient means and the lifespan chapters. As for the remaining chapters, you may turn to them from time to time when you have a moment of leisure. Also in your letter, you say that three times each day you bow in reverence to the seven characters of the title. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Seven characters, not six. And that each day you repeat the words Namu Ichijo Myoten 10,000 times. At times of menstruation, however, you refrain from reading the sutra. You ask if it is unseemly to bow in reverence to the seven characters or to recite Namu Ichijo Myoten without facing the Lotus Sutra, or if you should refrain from doing even that during your menstrual period. You also ask how many days following the end of your period should you wait before resuming recitation of the sutra. Now, ladies, I hope you're paying attention. But I'm going to leave you on a cliffhanger there, and we're going to cover that in the next video. This is an important thing for, not all of you ladies, but certainly in Nichiren's day, part of that karma of women versus men was that, well, men have to assert their control. So you ladies, when you're going through that magical period we men can't possibly understand, it would be disrespectful for you to participate or indulge in these great teachings. No. It would be an insult. You don't do that, right? You're a dirty thing for that period. And Nietzsche's going to blow that all to hell. That's just a crock. In fact, as I've told, I've had girlfriends in my life. Yes, I've actually had relationships. Who took on that mantle. Oh, you don't want to be around me. I'm at that disgusting part of the month. I mean, the words they use, very negative about their own bodily process. And I was always quick to point out, stop doing that. Stop saying that. Your menstruation is proof, actual proof of the amazing nature, not only of your life or of women's lives, but of the inculcating of life process itself of the universe. If it weren't for that amazing biological process, we would cease to have the opportunity to be sentient beings. How magnificent is it that in your body, I mean, Nichiren practiced Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, the ultimate teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha, the enactment of Buddha-ness, right? That we all have available to us. And he took it physically, embodied it every day. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, I'm living this invocation. Is not the simple process of menstruation a woman living, embodying the very process that is life? How could it be dirty? How could it be disgusting? It's proof of karma and potential manifesting right there before our eyes. Never think of yourself as a diminishment while you're experiencing that amazing process. It's karma busting, right? What woman hasn't felt some struggle going through her period? Some much more than others. You're expiating karma. Embrace it. take it to the Gohonzon. Take it to your Butsudan and your mandala and enlighten it with Buddha-ness. That's my prescription for you, ladies. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Like, subscribe, please do that. It's a Bodhisattva act. And for those of you who can and who do support this endeavor and all of it, not just these videos, but the podcast, the website, the bookstore, the mandala store, and the equipment. Some of you send equipment and all of it goes to use, let me tell you. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff happening here. I'm a constant researcher, yeah? Thank you. All right, that's it for today. I'll see you in the next one. Have a wonderful day. Take care of your health. Be kind to yourself. Ladies, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. And all of you, but this is directed to a woman, right? With much appreciation, I will see you next time. Bye-bye for now.